And welcome to That Horrorcast. I'm Mallory Smart.
And I'm Dmitry Samarov.
On today's episode, we discuss Natalie Erica James's unforgettably chilling debut feature, Relic. When elderly mother Edna inexplicably vanishes, her daughter Kay and granddaughter Sam rush to their family's decaying country home, finding clues of her increasing dementia scattered around the house in her absence. After Edna returns, just as mysteriously as she disappears, Kay's concern that her mother seems unwilling or unable to say where she's been clashes with Sam's unabashed enthusiasm to have her grandma back. As Edna's behavior turns increasingly volatile, both begin to sense that an insidious presence in the house might be taking control of her.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going all right. How are you?
I'm waking up. It's a slow wake-up day because it's a gloomy day.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, Do you ever do this? I woke up for a second at like 7:30. I thought I was getting up, and then the next thing I knew was 9:15. And I almost never miss a text alert, you know? It'll wake me up. Yours didn't. I woke up like 20 minutes after you texted, you know?
That is totally bizarre. Cool.
Yeah, so sorry. Well, yeah, slow moving today for some reason. I don't know why.
A lot of people have been blaming the eclipse on weird stuff, so let's blame it on that.
Did you see it?
You know, I don't know how much you could say I really saw it. I just know that, like, at some point I was like, it was really nice coloring outside, and then it's just like, oh, it's getting a little dusky.
But you didn't get the glasses and look up. Yeah, I was at the coffee shop, so they had them, so I got to see it. It was pretty cool. Same jackalope, just like the one 7 years ago. I was at the same exact place. It's like, oh wow, look at that! it looks like science fiction. Yeah, like 7-8 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to be like 2017.
I think so. Yeah, I think it's 2017.
See, I remember looking at it then. This time I was just like, it's really overhyped. Everyone's just like, it's not going to be around for another 20 years. And it's like, I think
they really
had
made
one.
Yeah, they had so many fucking news stories. It was like, I mean, this is not, it's not the apocalypse. Jesus Christ. People really, really want to be distracted from, well, for obvious reasons, from all kinds of horrible news that are ongoing that we don't want to deal with.
I mean, the eclipse is so much better. But no, yeah. I just eventually went outside on my balcony, and I thought it was funny because I could actually see everyone else who was, like, having the same apathetic vibe. Like, you could see, we're just, like, looking at our phones, like, we don't give a shit about this. But, like, slowly, like, half my building was out on that patio area.
Yeah.
And I could see people, like, at the parking garage and just people outside, and I was just like,
"No, that part is cool."
Full of shit, yeah, but we're all out here.
No, they said, I think they tracked, like, internet use went down like 40% or something like that, like in the country, something like that. It for about half an hour, you know, for that half hour. So it's nice that something can make people put down their fucking phone. Yeah, exactly.
Actually, that's it. You know what? A lot of us did have our phones because no one wanted to actually, like, admit they were there to look at the eclipse. Like, everyone was just looking down and be like, we're just going to take a look when we can. I don't know why I came up with the brilliant idea of maybe if I face away from it and try and take a picture on my phone,
yeah,
I can catch it. That didn't work.
Yeah. No, there was a whole articles about how you have to take a picture. There were some certain ways you have to deal with the filter or whatever. But I didn't care about taking a picture. Because that's the thing is, like, that drives me crazy in the age of smartphones. Everybody taking pictures of shit that there's a billion pictures of. Like, why the fuck would you take a picture of the bean, you know? Or, like...
Oh, that one? I hate when people want to call it the bean because that's actually not the name of it.
Yeah, but I know what the name of it is, but it's the fucking bean. Whatever.
I hate that we became known for that. Like, you know.
Yeah.
back like when I was a kid, everyone was just like, oh, Michael Jordan or Sears Tower. Now it's like,
it's better than
to the Bean. It's like, fuck off.
It's better than Al Capone and Wrigley Field. I'll take the Bean over those any day.
Al Capone was just kind of like trippy. It's like, I'll take it. But
no, that, for a long time, it was Al Capone all the time. There was a restaurant, I think you might be a little bit too young for the, in River North, like around where all the cheesy restaurants are, there was an Al Capone themed restaurant, like a, like one of those, you know, quote unquote fun restaurants, you know, with all the memorabilia. Yeah. Like that. I think it was when I was going to art school. It didn't last so long, but yeah, they really try to market the shit out of it.
Everyone tries to market Green Mill is like some kind of Al Capone like place.
Yeah,
they get the vibe, but yeah.
No, yeah, there's this urban legend that he, you know, that he owned it, and that there was tunnels under it, and there was speakeasy, blah blah blah. Apparently, most of that shit's been disproved, but it's just a very old bar, you know, the Green Mill. Yeah. Green Mill's a cool bar, but
I think I just went off on like went during an off time. Yeah. There weren't a lot of people. It was a weeknight, so it's probably that.
But to be, yeah, there's this week. I think there's still weekly show, story, kind of storytelling show called Paper Machete that's been there for a while. And the gimmick is that like the host assigns you to write something from that week's newspaper, and you got to write, you know, you got to present something. Either like an essay or a humor piece or a song, you know, and
that
perform
totally
it.
Totally sounds like something I would love. What is it called?
Paper Machete.
Writing it down.
Check it out. Yeah, I did it a couple of times, but like he's still going. I know he's still going because the guy's name is Christopher Pyatt, the host. But because I went in there randomly into the Green Mill on an afternoon for some reason. I think I was killing time. I was meeting somebody. Maybe I just went in for a drink, and he was there sitting, getting ready. But yeah, it's Saturday afternoon, so that's kind of a fun thing to do. But also, yeah, I mean, there's really good music, and it's a 4 o'clock bar. That's another thing, you know, about the Green Mill. Yeah, it's a very old school Chicago bar. It's a lot older than Cloud Gate. A.K.A. the God. Bean.
I'm so happy you said it. Thank you. I remember when it was being built. That was, I didn't think it was going to be a big deal.
Yeah, it's a very big deal.
Every time someone comes from like out of town, like anytime like a writer, I don't know if like you have writer people who come to visit Chicago and it's like their first time.
I'm not friends with writers. I'm not friends with artists. You know, come on. Dimitri, you know me.
With anybody.
Yeah, Dimitri has no friends. Dimitri hates everything, you know.
It's so Russian of you.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, they always want to see the Bean. And I'm just like, of all the things to see in the city, that's where you want to go.
See it is fine, but take no, my issue
everyone
is taking
wants to
a picture
take the
of
picture
it.
Picture with the reflection. Everyone always wants that.
Yeah, of themselves. No, but they take the themselves, okay, I get it. Just a one from further away, there's 10 trillion pictures like that. It's just like people taking pictures at the Museum of Art. Like, you know there are professional photographs of all this shit. Like, you think your cell phone picture will be any good? And or that you will ever look at it again? No. You know?
The only time I took pictures at museums was for school projects.
Terrible. The other fucked up thing in museums, well, like from teaching, is that like kids will, like you even take them to a museum, you see that, like there's a school like group, you know, and they have to draw from the art, and they're drawing from their fucking phone.
That's
they're drawing
impressive.
From, yeah, in the museum, they're looking, they'd rather look, because their whole life in reality is inside the little screen. Yeah, that's more real to them than the thing in front of their eyes.
I mean, this is just going to be like an offshoot, like statistic. I'm just going to take a wild guess. I feel like human beings these days spend at least like 80% of our life online.
Yeah, I think it would vary. But
Well, okay, let's bring it down to like Gen Z and Alpha. We are probably like millennials are probably like at 70%, but we're trying to lower it. You people, you're just like, I can take it or lose it.
No, I mean, I think most people my age are totally addicted to it.
Really?
I mean, oh yeah. I see people my age. The thing that drives me nuts is like people, like they can't even put the fucking thing in their pocket. They have to hold it out at the ready at every moment, you know, like a fucking, like Linus in his security blanket, you know?
I mean, I think you know why I do it is like I have the anxiety thing with my hands where I always have to have something in my hands. It's why I'm always carrying a cup of coffee or my phone or whatever because I don't know.
I was listening to you, one of your shows, one of your textual healing shows. You were talking about how you're playing with a slinky while you're talking to them or something.
I'm playing with it while I'm talking to you.
That's your podcast thing is the slinky.
Yeah, I just randomly do that like anytime. I don't know, like. What's so weird is
restless hand syndrome.
I do.
I know there's restless leg syndrome. I don't know if there's restless hand syndrome.
I really think it's one like born of like a thing where I just don't understand what I'm supposed to be doing with my hands other than picking up and doing things with them. I just feel like they can't not be working. And then two, I think it's like an anxiety thing and I got addicted to it. But I actually snapped my slinky in half. Because I played with it so long, and Blent actually bought me like a whole package of other ones because you can imagine how cheap they are. I don't touch them at all. I keep playing with my broken slinky.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, so you just play with like a half of it or something?
I actually play with both halves now. It's actually extra fun
now there's because there's two now.
And like put them together as a puzzle. Sometimes it's so weird.
Look at you. Well, I think that's a better story than people with their fucking smartphones. I'd rather hear about people playing with a slinky than a smartphone. Yeah. Personally,
I mean, you know what? Next time I'm around you, I will show you the slinky because it's always in my pocket.
Oh, you carry it with you. It's not just for home.
Oh yeah, carry it with me. It's a very small, like tiny.
Oh, it's a small slinky. It's not like a full size one.
Yeah, like
so full size slinkies. You know, you put them downstairs and stuff. You know,
I can never get that to work. By the way,
I think I had
like weird stairs at my house or something because I was never able to. My brother and I, we would get slinkies and maybe like down one.
You couldn't get it to walk down the stairs? That's like the main slinky thing, right?
It is the appeal, but yeah, we always only were able to get like a step or two. We were never able to get it down the entire stairs.
Let's see, your home was defective. The architect was had not made it safe for slinky use.
I mean, I feel like I could go on a real, like, tear about the stairs at my parents' house, but, like, they are unnatural stairs.
Are they steep, or?
Yes, they are very steep. Where, like, I feel like I'm a fairly athletic person. Anyone who's, like, new to the house, they're just like, aw, you guys are just being weird. Then they climb up the stairs, and I'm like, these are really weirdly steep stairs.
Yeah.
And there's, like, a tradition where at some point, everyone has fallen down the stairs.
See, and this is slowly leading us into the movie because there's a lot house shit in this movie. I mean, as somebody that's about to be a homeowner, I think this is a nice cautionary tale for you personally, this movie.
What I personally appreciated about this is that, like, it's clearly, you know, about, like, generations and dementia and family and how we handle that. But instead, last night I had a nightmare that my family had to move in with me and I couldn't get rid of them.
Right, right. Well, yeah. So it was doing its thing, the movie.
Yeah, like I was more like the old person was the stand-in for me.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And
no, you could do a reverse.
And I was just like, get the fuck out of my house.
You could easily reverse it and have like... You could have it from the granddaughter's point of view. She like just got her own new house, and then like suddenly her mom and grandma move in. You know,
the granddaughter pissed me off. I don't. She was so really? Self-righteous.
That's what young people are like. she that's what young people are. You know young people.
You know, I'm slowly losing that, like, in touchness with them.
No, but yeah. No, but you're starting to be of an age where you see young people as, you know, they're slowly becoming not you, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You're about there, right? Once you can separate yourself, like, you can see she's annoying you because you don't identify with her anymore, right?
Yeah. That,
the girl in this movie, I mean, right? Because you know, you're starting to be a different age. Yeah.
Where I'm like listening to the mother instead.
Right.
I just want to be like, can't you just listen to her? Like, if we followed mommy's advice, this would not be an issue. If we let her put the grandmother in the home, I think we'd all be set.
Yeah. Well, that shit that the granddaughter does about revealing to the grandmother that the mom's out shopping for nursing homes, it's such a dig at the mom. It has nothing to do with, like, she wants to undermine the grandma's relationship with her mom, you know, and like, it's such a political thing, you know, family politics thing.
Like, as you said earlier, that is actually a thing that happens, isn't it?
What's that?
Like, where grandchildren try and like almost like have a more closer relationship with their grandparents and try and undermine their parents and be like, oh, they're just a shitty daughter, but I'm a great granddaughter.
Well, that and well, because the grandparent-grandchild relationship is so much easier, you know, unless the grandparent is actually, you know, raising the grandchild, it's all the good stuff without any of the bad stuff. You know what I mean?
Oh, exactly. Like, also, you know, if you
in
go
both directions,
reverse, because like, she had no idea that there were any problems with her grandmother, whereas the mother did have some like vibes, like, oh, she's been having issues.
Well, yeah, and clearly the granddaughter doesn't know anything about the family history, has spent very little time really digging into it. She's just like her grandma who gives her stuff and says she's pretty and she's a favorite, you know?
Gives her that expensive ring.
And then tries to take it back, famously. Accuses her of stealing it. Yeah. No, but you know, there's that scene early on where, the mother is digging through shit and she comes upon that, sketchbook where they show the little the haunted log cabin, you know, and the granddaughter has never seen any of that. She doesn't know anything about that shit.
She doesn't know anything about like the house in general, like with the windows or whatever.
Yeah.
I keep trying to remember though, was it the mother or the granddaughter who discovered the one posted at first that says don't follow it?
I don't remember who did. Yeah. I mean, they both
the mother because
they're both doing their own searches through the house, and I mean, the thing that happens, the granddaughter gets hers big time, you know, when she gets trapped in the walls of the house, you know.
I think if there's one. Well, okay, there we could obviously describe the movie in one word, claustrophobic, definitely.
Mm, yeah.
But I don't know if you had this feeling, but for, what was the running time of this? Hour and a half, maybe a little above?
Yeah.
I just kept having the feeling of something's going to pop out at me. Like, I felt that tension, and then it never happened.
No, that's one of the strengths of this movie, is it just keeps giving you this creeping dread feeling, and it never gives in to the, like, the easy, like, jump scare thing, you know, that you're expecting. It just never happens because the subject in the movie is the real horror of, you know, of aging and dementia and unresolved family traumas and shit, you know?
There's a scene in It where, there's like an old lady and she's like, doing very similar actions, but they go for the cheap, like, and holy shit, something's wrong.
Yeah. What I was also thinking about rewatching this movie is that shitty movie X, where, you know, in X, the Ty West movie, like that kind of riffs on Texas Chainsaw, but like completely misses the point.
Oh yeah, I know what it is. I'm just trying to remember the movie.
Well, it has that old couple in the house. And it makes fun. It basically mocks them for like still wanting to fuck, you know, and wanting to live.
Like
I hated that movie so much.
Like how beautiful she used to be. And whatever.
It was such a hateful movie on so many levels. But in that, just the relationship to aging, you know, is so different. And here, like, you know, the horror is aging, but it's not. It's also telling you that it's come. The end of the movie clearly shows you, as you see the black mold on the mom's back. You know, the beginnings of it. You know, well, you that it's coming for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it's coming for all of us. It's not just some, like, silly, like, midway ride, you know. That there's no thrills and chills here. You know, that's...
It's a movie where you just want to advertise, be like, if you want to feel severely uncomfortable in a big sense of something's about to happen for two straight hours, watch this movie.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the movie is kind of a bummer, you know.
And in that, it's actually good.
No, but it's really well. It's really pretty well made, you know. I mean, some of the effects are kind of like the way these modern movies always are. You could see it's kind of CGI'd, you know, mm-hmm. like the effects of the mold and the water, unlike your Slinky, the water. Flowing down the stairs, you know, in that kind mm-hmm. of like art, it's all looks like it's made of gel or something. There's no way water could separate that way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. From a rug, but you need it for the visual effect. So there's some kind of like a little bit cheesy effects, but it's very minimal, you know, the effects, because the psychological thing is what this movie is all about.
I feel if there was any unnecessary thing. I mean, obviously it was just a plot device to get the granddaughter to explore the home more. I didn't like the whole neighbor thing. That just felt, I don't know, like very unnecessary. Other than as a cheap tool to be like, oh, she has to investigate the house more.
Well, also, yeah, and to get the grandma to say the a word that we don't use anymore. We're not allowed to use anymore to describe that neighbor kid.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I'm so used to old people in movies saying whatever, so it didn't, like, strike me as a, oh, yeah, that's very bad.
Yeah, I think, a screenplay device. It's also, I mean, it's kind of amazing how, well, except for him and the police guy, there are no men. There's nobody else in this movie, you know what I mean? It contributes to this feeling of isolation. Like we're trapped in the house and there's nobody else in the world. Like it's not like where she lives is like in the desert or something. Like there are you figure there are other people not too far away, but we never see them. You know?
I mean, that's the actually fun thing is you don't actually know if this is a rural area, the suburbs.
Like, yeah.
You just don't even you're just in the house and you just know that like it's not Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, you don't really care the location, and you just are like, it's just the house. The house is crazy and creepy as shit.
Yeah, it's amazing how on task this movie is about communicating what it wants to communicate, you know? Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a self-sustaining world. And it's, you know, it's a world that anybody with, you know, relatives can identify, see some aspect of, you know? Because... I mean, for me, people of that, the age of that, the grandmother, I mean, we're all Gen X people are dealing with this gigantic aging population, the boomers, you know, there's so many more of them than there is of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people I know are taking time out of their jobs or like having to travel all the time to help or take care, you know, of their parents or, you know. It's a big, big fucking
such
thing.
A big demand for not nurses, but you know, like
home health
aides,
yeah, all that. Because there's so many of them, such a giant generation, and they're living so long. I mean, clearly, like this, the grandma has like lived way past her sell by date. You know what I mean?
It was one of those things where I just kept getting the vibe again, like where I couldn't stand the self righteousness of the granddaughter. I just wanted to be like. That woman is just so old. Just let her be. Like, let nature take its course.
Yeah.
That might be a horrible take there.
No.
She seemed just as ready to go.
Yes. But then, and also, like, the movie really communicated effectively that thing with people that are going through dementia where they occasionally snap back and become the people they used to be. Mm-hmm. She was constantly going in and out, you know, of this kind of whatever lost fantasy world she was in.
I mean, I think at one point, like, she's saying that she, like, misses her husband and she wants to go be with him again.
Yeah. But, like, even the sweet moments, like when the granddaughter walks in on her dancing to the record, you know, and she's reminiscing about, like, this song always gets me, this, you know. And she goes back to what she used to be. This movie also made me think of, like, the time I had this job just out of art school. Like, I took a short break from driving a cab in Boston and had a job with Lifeline, you know, the panic button company.
Oh, okay.
And I would go to poor neighborhoods and replace the batteries on the devices. And there was people that would call us every day, and it's just because they were lonely and they wanted somebody to talk to. And if you push the panic button, a fucking ambulance would come, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it cost a lot of money, but it was because these were like their children of these people, instead of having them live with them or putting them in a home, would just get these devices. And that function in place of actual care.
And that's why we have smartphones these days. See, I gave you the solution. No, it is terrible how we treat old people in this country. But, you know, the mother seemed like she was even willing to, like, do the, like, compromise of saying, like, okay, well, you could live with me then, just not in this house. So it seemed like she did care to a certain degree. She was just checked out for a very long time.
She was checked. You could tell that like when she has the meeting with the police guy, the police chief, he keeps asking her when they saw each other last. And she says, oh, a couple of weeks. But, you know, she's lying. It's probably been a year or more, you know. You know she's lying.
On the condition of the house and how shocked she was of it. It's like, yeah, okay, you have not been here in a very long time.
The house is, but like the grounds, you know, like you could see that outside. No, like nobody has cut the lawn. Nobody's swept the leaves. All the stuff outside was in disrepair. And she goes back and forth, but like when she also has the conversation with her with the granddaughter about, like, the granddaughter is like, well, why don't she live with you? Like, well, she has to be watched, and clearly she doesn't really want her mom to be living with her. Because they don't like each other. They have a problem. We don't know exactly what the problem is, but they're clearly estranged, you know?
But at the end, obviously, spoilers don't matter. She does decide that she wants to go stay with her messed up mother.
And, well, because and
slowly becomes like her.
Well, the point is that there's no escaping it. That's the point. you can run away from the house, but you're still going to become what the grandmother is, you know, over time. Mm-hmm. That's the point of the all of them, you know, lying down in that bed at the same time. You know, it's like that. It's that kind of that illustration of the monkey becoming a man. You know, like, or like the baby becoming a grown up. You know, that kind of like time lapse thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You see the three of them, and you can't really miss the point that this is just the. This is just the ravages of time. This is what happens to all of us.
Yeah. I do like the moment. It felt so realistic. Not realistic, but exactly how, like, dementia would work was when there was a sudden snap of, she's not grandma anymore. Get out. Like, this is not her at all.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, it uses the kind of the tropes and trappings of a horror movie, like when she for a short time becomes a monster, you know. But you know, that's a dramatization of the moment when the dementia takes over and they don't recognize you anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's not that she will act. I don't think you ever get the feeling, even though when she's full on like a monster, that she's gonna like kill the daughter and the the granddaughter. It's that, it's the horror is that they know they're becoming, slowly becoming her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're trying to run away from, and that's why the mother has like this kind of moment of wisdom and self-realization that there's nowhere for her to run, you know?
So what do you think we were supposed to be experiencing with the granddaughter getting completely lost as shit in the house? Because other than just feeling the dread and claustrophobia or whatever, like, are we supposed to be associating that with, oh, she's slowly understanding what's going on? Or
I think it's her, like, the beginnings of her realization of, like, her whatever the family history is. And, I mean, the screenplay or whatever leaves it just vague enough that you can put it in your own thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, just like there's no jump scares in this movie, they don't go and tell you, like, that the grandpa was, like, kept the grandma in a, like, a sex dungeon or whatever the hell the problem was, you know, in the mm-hmm. past that she's haunted by. They don't spell it out for you. They keep it ambiguous, which allows a viewer to put in their own shit. You know what I mean?
And, you know, like, sometimes you might even get, like, some haunted house vibes, or like with the cabin thing and they use the windows and everything, you're like, maybe it's some Amityville horror shit or whatever. Like, they never give a reveal. Like, it's just always hanging over your head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see shadows occasionally, and it's like, they're just shadows, you know?
Well, or the scene where the grandma demands that the daughter look under the bed, that there's something under the bed. And they never show you what's really under the bed. There's something under there, but they don't, you know? And then the book, and then something flings the book at her, you know? Hits her in the head.
I like
and
that.
And she accuses her mom of throwing a book at her. And it's like, I didn't do that.
I will say, that felt like another dementia moment, hardcore.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, It's a pretty effective movie, like, to make you think about real shit, which, you know, horror movies often aren't, you know, like, oftentimes horror movies are like an escape, and this movie's not an escape, you know?
I will say that probably is what made it feel more dreadful at moments, is that it was just too real. Like, the fact that it actually forced me to have a nightmare, where I was like, oh my god, the hell, and then I, like, woke up and was like, ah, shit, Relic caused this. Like,
yeah, but at least didn't make you have a nightmare about home ownership, though, huh?
No, no home ownership. It was a family basically invading and encroaching on my personal space and not leaving me alone.
So it was your family? It wasn't Bullet's family that was moving
in?
Both. Oh, everybody was moving in?
Yeah.
Were they all, like, in the same room, or, like?
This house was very similar to the Relic house, where, like, the rooms and layout made no sense.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. Like, it seemed like there is one, like, basement in my dream. And then it's like, and I think there's, like, almost like an in-law suite. I hear there are some houses that have those.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It was
right. It's like a whole bedroom and bathroom and kind of like for visitors kind of thing.
Yeah. And I just could not get rid of them. And that's why I sort of at times related to the grandmother, because, yeah, she's just living her dementia-filled life, and now people are trying to rein her in. It's like, you guys let her go for so long.
She's living her best dementia life.
She is. And, yeah, you know, self-righteous granddaughter, she got in the way of it, because, like, if you were going to help her, well, guess what? You ruined it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, she gets lost in the walls of the house because she gets, and, you know, it's that curiosity kills the cat thing, you know?
Mm.
She breaks through a wall and she, like, can't stop herself from going in, you know? Well, if you go in, you be careful what you find, kind of thing.
It's, you know, what happens when you shatter illusions, you know?
Yeah, yeah, because she goes and finds out that her sweet, you know, loving grandma's not what she, you know, it's not what she really is. I mean, she still is that partly, but there's a lot more, and a lot of it's not fucking pretty.
I feel like she was just totally like willing to be like, I'm overlooking this odd thing or that odd thing until the ring moment happened. And then she was like, mm-hmm. Whoa, this is so much more than I thought it was.
Yeah, it really, the movie really effectively portrayed like there's these three women and they're all estranged from each other in different ways. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. the mom and the granddaughter had their own, clearly, they were not close. You know what I mean? They felt like strangers to each other a lot of the time.
Oh, definitely. Right? Yeah.
So they were each perpetuating this, whatever this distance or this estrangement was that started with the grandmother, and it was still going on. And that's kind of like another reason why there was no escaping, because they did this to each other, whatever the issue is.
I feel like this is one of the few horror movies that if there was a sequel, I would equally enjoy it. Like if we just go down the next generation.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, like when it's 30 years later and the granddaughter is visiting her mother. Like, well, they could also move her into the house, right? They could have it in the same house.
Exactly. Well, I mean, the mother refuses to leave the house at the end. Well,
that's true.
She's never able to get her out.
So maybe, yeah, the granddaughter escapes and she goes and has a family and she brings her newborn there to visit grandma. And like then it starts all over again.
Yeah, it's a cycle that keeps on going. And I don't know why, but I think I'd enjoy it.
Yeah, and the cycle being just human life. It's procreation and like the coming generations. The horror of this movie is actually people breeding.
I do like the lack of men, by the way.
Yeah, there's the neighbor kid and there's the cop. I think that's it that I remember.
So we have no like vibe of like granddaughter having any relationship. Mommy obviously was divorced, single mom, whatever. Like that was.
Yeah, because like the grandma says, well, she gave it a go when she gives her the ring, the granddaughter the ring. It's like, well, your mom had a go, you know, like, and they're kind of like chuckling about it. So clearly her relationship didn't last, you know. So, yeah, they're solitary. They're alone, each of these women, you know.
But then it almost makes you feel a little weird of like, okay, so we have three kind of really stubborn, independent women and, oh, that fucks them up in the future.
I don't think the movie is making a global judgment on them for, or like is saying that they'd be better off married or whatever, because mm-hmm. in the universe of this movie, there are no men really, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like their absence definitely does speak to it. I don't know.
Yeah. No, but like, I don't think it's implying that if there was a man around, things would be better. You know what I mean?
I would say like not like a man exactly, but like some form of normal family unit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like nervous saying normal because I'm not saying like heteronormative. I'm just saying like a balance.
Oh, you monster. You're a progressive, conservative monster.
I know.
It's been revealed. There are men that haunt the movie, primarily the grandfather who died, and the grandma says it's like this house has felt like strange since he's gone. So yeah, there's a loss of relation. There's like the loss of the men. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that it necessarily says that it was good when the men were around. It's just like it's different now, and they have to deal with things on their own.
It did feel like the grandfather wasn't that great.
No. Clearly not. Because there's these shots, like in the shots in the cabin or like where you see wherever the grandma goes, you know, and she's on the edge of the bed and she falls off the bed kind of thing. And you don't know where she's falling to or who, if somebody's pushed her or something. Yeah, I don't think we get the sense that the grandpa was a good guy.
And you obviously have like moments where she's talking to herself, but about her invading daughter and granddaughter and everything.
Uh-huh. And yeah, I mean, you can connect some dots. I mean, this is what I thought was that maybe one of the reasons the mother has stayed away all this time is the grandfather, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was the problem.
There was definitely hardcore judgment about however the daughter was living her life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, I mean, the reason the mother wasn't communicating with the grandmother was maybe like a strained relationship with the grandfather.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is that like there probably was like bad blood, and you could tell that even like it kind of still felt that way with the grandmother.
That's why the picture, the drawing of the cabin was like filled her with horror, you know, and she didn't even want to tell her own daughter about what went on in there. And she really doesn't say what, but that was where they would threaten to punish her and lock her, and she'd get locked into the cabin, you know. And the cabin was obviously the province of the grandfather, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That was his place.
I really do appreciate that movie, is that it just kind of let you fill in the blanks for a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it's that thing where it's a really hard line to walk. The difference between ambiguous and vague, you know? Because mm-hmm. there are other movies that are just vague. And they just feel empty. And this movie doesn't feel empty. But there's a lot of pieces that it's not giving you. You have to supply them yourself. Yeah.
That's what really made it feel mostly like in real life. Because if you had a parent with dementia or a grandparent with dementia, there are no good answers.
No. And you know how it'll end. You know?
Yeah.
There's the end is the... The end that comes for all of us, of course. Yeah.
And then there's the fear that it could be passed on. So.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, so this is this director's first full-length movie, you know, and she's a young woman. So really, I mean, I imagine that, I don't know how old she is, but she's more like the granddaughter's age than anybody else in this movie, you know? It's kind of the granddaughter's point of view in a way, you know?
And a lot of times, you know, you're actually right. It was almost primarily from her point of view because I never once identified with the mother.
You identified with the mother, you said earlier, but like as a person, but like not the in the point of view of the movie, it's mostly the granddaughters, I think.
Well, I'm seeing that it was actually produced by Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, he was somehow involved. I don't know why, but it's an Australian movie, and it's an Australian director, and it's her first movie, first full-length movie, yeah.
I'm trying to see how old she is. She looks
young. There's not much info on her. She looks. Yeah, there's one picture on IMDb of her, and she looks very young, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going like on her website. That's how you know that like she's new. She has a website.
She's still got her own website. Yeah. Oh, what is? Yeah, what is it? Does it say how old she is?
It does not.
Yeah.
But she looks very, very young.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think her first credits are like in 2016 or 2017. There's some short movies.
She did music videos. It seems starting in 2015.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that's 10 years ago. So she's probably in her 30s, you know, I'm going to guess.
Very good if she's in her 30s.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that like we're a bit of an ageless generation, just a little bit.
Yeah, she's probably around your age, I'm going to guess.
Like you just can't tell with our generation how old someone is. Yeah. You can't see age on IMDb, can you?
I think not necessarily. Yeah. But even like, yeah, she doesn't have a wiki page of her own.
I was just about to check that.
But those don't always have age either. It depends what they supply, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's some people that on Wikipedia that don't have ages, you know?
She is so not known where I can't look up her age. You could usually Google someone's age.
Yeah. Then she's done a good job not to overshare.
Well, in today's world, we really like oversharing.
Yeah, this movie, like, although it's set clearly in contemporary times, actually doesn't have very much internet stuff. You know, it has very minimal internet. There's some references to it, but big plot point, you know?
The only time, like, I think I ever saw internet being used is that, like, you know, they had to quickly, like, look something up or use, like, GPS to get to, like,
yeah,
the Melbourne place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, yeah, it's not... It's
a
not
house a... that didn't shout that it had Wi-Fi or anything.
Yeah, I don't think the grandma had internet, at least that we could see. And she was playing a record, you know, and she was...
That record scene, they did a very good job of, like, showing that, like, it's supposed to be a happy feeling, but instead it feels just creepy.
Yep.
Where it's like, well, then, was like, do I prefer it if she was checked out or in this really creepy, like, I think she's back a little bit in her own self.
Well, because that's when, and the next scene, I think, is when she accuses the granddaughter of stealing her ring, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's right after that happens. that's a super real thing, where, like, aging people accusing, like, you know, whatever, people that come and clean their houses or nurses or grandchildren of stealing things from them because their memory's going, you know? They forgot that they gave them stuff.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, then again, with all the Post-its and everything, you can see that she's aware that she's going.
Yeah. Do you have any grandparents left?
No.
Yours are gone, right?
Yeah.
Because your parents are older. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the always fun things I get to tell everybody, because everyone my age, they still have their grandparents. Yeah. It's like, I'm the youngest in a very big-ass family.
Yeah, because your parents are like almost like my parents' age, almost.
Yeah.
They're probably a little younger. Are your parents in their 70s?
They both turned 72 this
year. Okay, yeah. Right. Mine are turning 77 this year.
See?
Isn't that crazy? Normal. Yeah. It's pretty close. Yeah.
I mean, my oldest sister is kind of close to your age, so yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because I also have, you know, my baby brother just turned 35.
Exactly.
So he's just a little older than you. Yeah.
Just barely.
And they're about to have a baby. My parents are furiously shopping for a place in California. Like, you just bought a house. They're going to buy a house out there.
That sounds like fun. And expensive.
It's very expensive. My dad just sent me these pictures. It's beautiful. It looks like this place they're looking at. It looks like an enchanted, like, cabin. I don't know. It's a little house, but, like, and then I saw the price of it. It's like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Even the cutest little houses in California are, like, a lot of money.
Well, it's all houses over there. Like, you can't, you know, there's not, like, apartment buildings unless you're in a gigantic, like, you know, condo kind of situation.
Even those are pretty expensive. Yeah.
Everything's so fucking expensive, but that's all right. They can handle it. I'm just really hoping that they find a place and they love it and they just move out there for good. So I don't have to go to Boston anymore. That's
Are you going to be the checked out, like, person, or you're just going to, like, be like, I don't need to know what's going on with them. Just like the daughter is with her mother.
I mean, I go and see them a couple of times a year, but, you know, I live a thousand miles away. I'm getting ready to go. I'm going next month to visit them right after my classes end. I'm going. I do my best, but, you know, I have kind of limited means and I'm sure not moving back to Boston, you know.
I was going to say, that's another thing that they did a very good job at doing in the movie is they never actually say how far away. They
don't, but it feels like they're far away, you know?
But close enough where the mother's able to drive all the
That's
way.
True, yeah.
But we don't know how long the drive is, so it can be like a really insane-ass drive.
No, but that's where it does this good job of remaining, like, you put in those details, like, it just doesn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're supposed to fill in your own experiences, and, you know? Yeah, it's just an empty enough container that, like, you supply your own personal details. no, I mean, Look, if they move to California, they'll be even further away from me, you know? It'll be 2,000 miles instead of 1,000. But I'd rather make that trip because I'm sick of going back to Boston. There's nothing there for me except hanging out with them for a couple of days, you know, which is nice. I like spending time with them, but...
You don't have any, like, old towny friends in Boston?
No, I have, like, two or something, yeah. There's nothing for me there, like nothing. And I so dislike that place. Like, I didn't have a good time, and most of the memories are bad ones, and I don't want to go back there. And once they're not there anymore, I won't. You know, I'll never go, like, back to Boston just to hang out, you know?
No fun sepia tone memories for you?
No.
I imagine California would be way more fun to check out. So yeah.
I don't know that I really love California either, but I don't have all these associations, and I like Max, and I like his wife, you know, and hopefully I'll like their baby, you know.
You never know how that one's going to work out, but yeah.
I just got an invite to the baby shower, which my mom took exception to because, like, that's an old, I guess somebody told me it's like a Jewish thing, but, like, they don't like, it's a superstition, you know, like, it's kind of counting your chicks before they hatch, literally, you know, like, you don't do that, the baby shower, because it's sort of like, it's tempting fate, you know what I mean, for something to go wrong.
I definitely could imagine that. I never actually would have thought about it that way until you just said it.
Yeah, because they do a baby shower before the baby's born. You know what I mean?
Now anytime I see someone who's pregnant and saying that they want to have a baby shower, now I'm just going to have that thought.
There you go. You're welcome.
I'm just gonna be like, you never know. You can still lose the baby.
No, my mom commented on that, like, after, because they got an invite too to this baby shower. And it's like, it's such a, like, a contemporary, like, there's like an Amazon registry thing, and it's an Evite, like, it's like, you know, they're definitely young people. my brother and his wife, you know.
Baby showers are so awkward for people that don't have children.
Yeah, I've never been to one. Have you been to many?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you have lots of relatives, but, like,
I mean, I was lucky that with some of my siblings, they only did a baby shower for, like, their first kid, and then were like, all right, and these are the subsequent children.
You don't need the fucking, if you're going to have more kids, you just give the new baby all the old crap, right? Isn't that what you do? You save that stuff for the second and third babies.
You tell the my yuppie siblings to do that. Yeah.
But that's insane, because, like, a baby grows out of a thing after a month, right? I mean,
that's how I was raised. My parents had five of us, and it's like, all right, now this is your toy.
Yeah. That makes all the sense in the world.
It's the only reason why, like, we had a Millennium Falcon from, like, the 80s.
Right.
It's like, and we're not collectors. We just don't want to throw it away.
And what was your first Slinky? When did you get your first Slinky? To round it back to a thing from the beginning.
You know, actually, I do think that we got it at Toys R Us.
Yeah? Oh, when Toys R Us was still around.
I know. We're slowly, like, aging ourselves. I could have actually aged myself more and be like, it could have been from FAO Schwartz, but no, I think it's from Toys R Us. I remember it was more of, like, a metal Slinky.
Yeah, they used to be metal. Oh, so yours is plastic?
Yeah, the one I have.
See, the problem with the plastic one, it doesn't make that satisfying sound, you know, that the metal one did, you know? Like when the rings, you know, hit each other. Yeah.
I feel like this is like, I should put a registry up and have a Slinky on it so someone can get me the proper Slinky.
Are you having a baby? A registry just for, it's like, it's a GoFundMe to supply Mallory with Slinkies for the rest of her life.
I'm almost at the thing where I just want to be like, can I just have a registry just because I don't have, like, people, like, children or whatever?
Yeah,
I feel like it's only fair.
Yeah, so the baby shower thing, you know, I sent him back, like, my regrets that I wasn't coming because it's in May. Like, I'm not going to that, and that, I'm sorry, I can't get you anything on your registry because it's on Amazon, and I don't do Amazon, so I'll have to get you some other present, like, ooh, separately. Yeah, I don't do Amazon.
Line in the sand.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I don't use Amazon, like, ever. like if I can help. I know they do back end like server and other shit, you know, for many other companies, but I don't consciously ever buy anything from Amazon, like mm-hmm. ever. Yep. That's one of my lines for sure.
So no, I don't use Google and Amazon.
No Google searches, no Amazon, no Facebook. Yeah.
We'll make sure not to get you too onto Amazon. Yeah.
Well, you can get me whatever you like, but I'm just
going to advertise that it's from Amazon.
Though. Right. Right. Because you need to pledge your allegiance to Bezos.
With Amazon, it was different when, like, I was growing up, and I don't think a lot of people actually remember. It was for college books. It was cheaper to get college books on Amazon than it was to get at the college bookstore.
Well, yeah, people forget that Amazon started as a bookstore. Like, that's what it was.
And it made total sense. Like, it was perfect at that because, I mean, I don't know if you remember how expensive books are for college, but, like, it's insane.
Well, the thing about me and that I never had to get those because I didn't go to real college.
There you go.
I didn't ever have to buy those, like, super expensive textbooks because I never took a class that required them. Yeah. The only kind of expensive book I had to get was the there's an art history, world art history book, a big fat one. I forget who wrote it, but there's like a standard one. I had to get that. That's like the only thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I never, you know, I didn't go to real college, so I didn't have that. But yeah, that's you know, but they've always sold books at a loss, and they continue to Amazon. You know, that's how they drive people out of business.
Yeah, just so eventually they started to think bigger.
You never Modlin was never distributed by SPD, right?
We got an offer years ago.
Yeah, and it wasn't worth it.
You know, everyone kept recommending it. And then when I actually saw their terms, I was like, fuck them. Like, no.
Yeah, see, they wouldn't accept me because I publish my own books. You know?
We actually got approached by them.
Yeah.
And, yeah, as I said, once we started, like, seeing, like, how many books they wanted, like, on hand and what the cost of everything was, I was just like... The fuck do they think they are? Like, I'm not doing that.
It's weird that people are so shocked that they failed. They've been wobbling for years, you know, like it's been clear. There was a story a few years ago about, like, you know, like employees being really unhappy there. Yeah. So you could just tell it was teetering. But the fact that all these small presses trusted them with, like, you know, thousands of dollars of stock that they'll never get back.
It's a thing where you actually realize that presses don't do a great job of communicating with each other, because I definitely spoke to a few other presses before, like, totally passing on it, and even they were like, nah, it's not worth it. It seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
So you could tell the people that really got hung up to dry are the ones who, one, were either not very communicative with other presses and didn't get told the red flags of it.
Yeah.
Or they just... were very full of themselves and were like, we have a lot of money, we want them. I mean, I was seeing that, like, one press said that they are at a loss now of $13,000.
Right. Yeah, no, they'll never get it back because now they have to... Because if, like, SPD just sold off all their shit to Ingram, you know, and, like, now these presses have to buy their shit back. Isn't that fucked up?
Well, actually, what's worse is they first have to hunt them down, find where they are, and then buy them back.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet a bunch of these presses will die because of this. You know, they won't be able to recover.
Oh, I definitely imagine that.
Yeah.
Been seeing, like, another round of... I feel like it happens every couple of years, just a round of presses just being like, okay, we're done now. So I've
seen a few. But this, for the most part, you know, these things are started with a lot of idealism and it's like a labor of love, and then you run out of energy. But yeah, a lot of them, the ones that remain will end up in some version of my situation when there's no distribution at all, you know, and you have to depend on word of mouth. And that's why, like, you know, like you got that email from me earlier this week about the pre-order for my new book, because I need people that I know to spread the word. That's the only way anybody will find out, you know?
I posted about it on all my social media accounts.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. That's all I asked for.
That's what friends are for. See, you have a friend, Dimitri.
Aw, one friend. You're one my friend. One friend. I don't know. No, a lot of these presses will have to ask themselves some very hard questions, you know?
It's definitely, I don't know. I had one friend who was about to start a press, and then she got overwhelmed, like, right before the press was about to come out. And I'm like, I even said, I was just like, just don't do it. Like, if you are already overwhelmed, don't dive in at all. You're just going to get worse at it. And
of course. Yeah. No. And yeah, if your hope is that you're going to, like, whatever, really, really make a lot of money, you're really barking up the wrong tree.
There's only one worse thing than having the disappointment of you're not making a lot of money. It's the telling the author that they're not making a lot of money.
Right.
Like, that's one of those, like, you really hate to be the bearer of bad news and be like, I am so sorry nobody wants to buy your book. Like, I'm trying. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, the only reason that the my think my setup works is that I do all the work. You know what I mean?
I mean, you're, like, on the ground. You're, like, hitting up bookstores yourself. You really, like, keep tabs on stuff.
Well, but very few bookstores. Mm-hmm. And fewer all the time. I mean, like, you know, there's 3, 4, 5 bookstores in Chicago that I don't go into. I have serious problems with that'll irreparably damaged relationships, you know, for one reason or another. And then, yeah, with this new book, because of the cost of it, I don't think it's going to be in any bookstores. I can't afford it for it to be, because it's more expensive to print and I'm charging more. I have to, you know.
How much are you charging again?
$30. It's pretty reasonable for what it is.
Yeah, I imagine. Like, obviously, it's got a lot of color, so
it's over 200 color full color reproductions.
A lot of people don't realize, like, how expensive just even adding the color is.
Yeah, it's gotten much cheaper than it used to be. This used to, I wouldn't have been able to even fantasize about this thing, you know, a few years ago. Mm-hmm. It's gotten much cheaper. But I still have, in order for it to be even remotely affordable, I have to order 500 copies.
That's around the amount that most presses do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have to, and I'm doing the thing I always do. I'm going to sign and number them, you know? So people like that. The people that buy them like that, you know? Mm-hmm. That's like there's a personal touch, and it's, yeah, they're not going to. I'm just finishing up the design right now. I just yesterday put in the page that says, like, you know, blank of 500 copies, you know? Just doing the colophon with all the stuff. Bought my ISBN number, waiting on the Library of Congress, all the shit, you know?
Yeah, see, it's a headache.
But you can, you know, if you really have to want this thing. And, you know, like, I really love books, and I love making them. And, yeah, the payoff is the process. It's not anything afterwards, let me tell you. I just like doing the thing, you know?
As you said, it's a labor of love.
Yeah. But yeah, this thing specifically will be like imagine like a calling card that I can use for a while, because it's a survey of my artwork, you know?
Definitely.
Yep. Your book cover's in there.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very cool.
Yay. Yeah. There's an illustration section. Yours and Claire's, yeah, are on, like, opposite. Yep. You each get a full page. Yep.
Dude, I'm going to tell Claire, then she could actually, like, start pushing it too.
Yeah. So I don't know Claire. I don't know Claire at all. People. Yeah. Yeah, I exchanged a few emails with her when we were ironing out the details for her jacket design, but I don't know her at all.
We've spoken
a
lot, but just, like, online.
It's so funny how, yeah, like, you have all these people that you're, like, allegedly friends with, but you've never met her, huh?
No, she's one of the few people that she was a Malden House editor. We were going to meet in person at a reading, and then I pulled out last minute.
Okay. Where she's in North Carolina or?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But we did finally sort of speak face to face because I did that. Did I tell you I was doing a podcast like panel thing where someone was going to interview me, Claire, Jessamyn Violet, and Kirsten McKenzie because we all somehow had the fun idea of writing books about female-led bands all at
no.
the same time?
No, what was that? Did that happen already? Or
we recorded it. The episode comes out April 26th.
What podcast is it?
It's called Rock is Lit. So on the nose.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, that was probably like one of the few times like I actually saw people. I hated the fact that like, again, like I had to see people.
Oh, you had to do the Zoom thing or?
Yeah, it made sense though, because you have five voices, the four of us, and then the
So you had the box, the Brady Bunch boxes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although, like, one, it was a little annoying because anytime someone would speak, then their screen would be like the main thing that we all saw, and it's like awkward. But with Claire, I just want to add that like she is such a white woman Instagram person. You could see like when you see the background of someone's house and be like,
would she have the bookcase behind her, or what does she do?
No, for her, it was just like, you see like the nice kind of yuppie decor and everything.
Oh, really?
And I was just like, you have a nice place.
Ah.
Yeah, like with me, I have the bookshelf. With Kirsty, she was just like on a couch. And then Jessamyn, she's also a musician, so she was like hanging in her area. Me and her, we were the only ones who had cool microphones.
That's funny. I do appreciate like back to the movie how little like there was no their whole relationship or lack of it was in reality, not in any virtual, not even on the phone, you know, really.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that the granddaughter wasn't even phone obsessed.
And we actually know the least about her, you know, in a way.
The fact that she's just so willing to drop everything and be like, I'm going to be with my grandmother.
Yeah, it's unusual. That's why
I have no life.
Yeah, I suspect that maybe, this is the director's story or something she was relating to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because she's mostly the person we're identifying with, even whether we like her or not, you know?
We need to find out more about this director. And not just about her age. I just find it fascinating. I didn't realize that this was her first big movie because it's really well done.
Yeah. On IMDb, it says that she's got one in post-production, like a new movie. So she's got something coming up. I don't know if it's there's no details about it. It's called Apartment Something. I don't know. Don't know anything about it.
I am checking Apartment 7A.
Yeah.
Okay, why do all her movies have Wikipedia pages, but she doesn't?
I'm sure that's a concerted effort. I get maybe she's a private person that doesn't want her shit out there, you know? Maybe she has a wild and crazy personal life that she doesn't feel like people should know about. I don't know.
This one will
call her up and ask her.
It would be great actually to like have someone like that on the show or whatever. This one is going to be produced by John Krasinski, and it's based on Rosemary's Baby. It's going to be a prequel to it.
Oh, so that's the apartment that the thing is. Oh, I see. Oh, interesting. Okay.
Someone has a thing for claustrophobic spaces.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm always a sucker for movies that are based like where the house is like a character, you know. I always love that. So that's one of the reasons this movie worked for me.
I'm trying to see who's in the movie. A lot of them look familiar. I just don't know a lot of these actors.
I mean, she must have connections with actors because she got Jake Gyllenhaal was one of the producers on this thing, you know. So she has Hollywood connections somehow, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like she's just one of those people that, like, word of mouth. I mean, if Jake Gyllenhaal was producing one, then it makes sense that, like, John Krasinski would do one as well. He's been producing quite a bit of horror lately.
Doesn't he do those Quiet Place movies, or is that him?
Yeah, that's him.
I've never seen any of those. Are those any good?
I've only seen the first one.
It seems like a gimmick to me. I don't know. Like, from the trailer, I wasn't super curious about it. But, like, is it any good?
The first time I watched it, it was good. I didn't finish the second time.
Oh, okay.
It's one of those movies where, like, when you know what's going to happen, then it's not really worth the rewatch.
Yeah, right.
Like, I don't know what movie you and I were talking about. Get Out. The
Menu was that way. Remember The Menu? Oh, yeah. Like, rewatching it was kind of unsatisfying.
There are a lot of movies like that where it's like, it's really good the one time, and then once you know, it's like, you know.
Right. Every M. Night Shyamalan movie ever.
Why is that the first thing that popped in my mind?
Well, because he's one of these gimmick people, like, where there's a twist. I see dead people. You know, that's what it started with. You know, like, once you know it's that they're all dead, then, like, you kind of, that's it. The magic is gone. But, yeah, he makes schlock. He's a terrible filmmaker.
I enjoyed Knock at the Cabin.
Yeah, I know. You said you tried to have us talk about it. I won't do it. I won't do Shyamalan Ma Ding Dong. I'm not interested.
The fact that, like,
he's a hack.
But it's the one movie that he made that didn't actually have a spin.
Oh no.
Yeah.
It was just like people attacking the cabin the whole time.
Like, the spin is there is no spin.
It's like the Big Bad Wolf, right? Like, I'll Huff and I'll Puff, and it's basically the Three Little Pigs as a horror movie, right?
It really was. I think it's based on, like, another story as well. He doesn't come up with any of his own ideas that are, like, original.
Nothing, and, like, there's a new one. I don't. It's somebody else. Night Show. Is it a daughter or a wife or something? There's a new one coming out. And it's a total ripoff of something. I just saw the preview for it. Another Night Shyamalan, but it's not M. Night. It's like, it's a woman's name. I don't know. There's some new thing, and it's a total ripoff of something I just saw. It's just flown out of my head, but it'll come back to me later.
I'm trying to remember. I read a book in middle school. I forget the name of it, but when I watched The Village, I immediately was just like, he read the book too.
No, the guy's never had an original thought. Like, my favorite movie of his is probably Unbreakable, but it's just a horror movie. It's just a superhero origin story, you know? You know, Unbreakable with Sam Jackson and Bruce Willis, like, where he's like Dr. Glass or Mr. Glass, you know, and Bruce Willis is like this super super strong guy. He's like the Guardian or the whatever.
The book I read, it was called Running Out of Time.
Uh-huh.
It was a YA book.
Yeah.
And it's basically the exact story of The Village.
Sure. And all of it, yeah, all of his movies have this, like, have that children's story vibe, which makes me feel like, well, why do you think I don't want to feel like a child. Why are you trying to make me feel like a child? I don't like that either. You know, like,
you feel like he's patronizing?
A little bit. Like, he's trying, it's this kind of hokey, like, he's trying to enchant his audience and to make them feel like they're, like, little again or something. Like, world of make-believe, but, like, it just feels phony. I don't know.
A lot of his movies do really focus on, like, a child's perspective of things.
I think all of them, pretty much.
Yeah, like Signs, Village, obviously, Knock the Cabin.
Yeah. Signs was just like laugh out loud terrible. What a schlock. Oh my god. But they're also
that movie to Belen for the first time though a couple of years ago.
They're so dependent on plot and twists. It's the same. It's a big problem I have with Hitchcock a lot of times. It's the same problem. They're so reliant on these, like, thrills and chills, you know, that once you get the gimmick or whatever, like, there's nothing to watch.
Yeah, it lacks substance.
Well, they don't care about the characters or anything else. It's just this, like, trick thing. Yeah, it's fucking with the audience, and I really resent that.
I am trying to think, like, you know, obviously we just noted in the Relic that I was able to, like, at moments identify with all the characters. Mm-hmm. I don't think in any M. Night Shyamalan film I've actually been like, I relate to this character to anyone.
No. Because they're not fleshed, because they're not real. They're just, they're kind of like action figures put there, like, to, or like ventriloquist dummies for his plot twists, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whereas like something like The Relic, there's no plot twist in The Relic. You know, like, it's just like it's a slow-mo, you know, creep towards death, you know, as we all are involved in, you know. How can you not identify with that, you know? Like,
it's a movie that M. Night Shyamalan can never do because, obviously, there was no spin.
No, there's no cool gimmick. There's no, yeah, there's no twist. Given.
There's no, okay, she's being haunted or something's going crazy. The house has a problem.
There's no reveal, yeah.
Yeah.
Even down to, like she full-on embraces, like, this horror thing, like, where at the end, you know, the daughter is literally peeling her mother's skin off, and there's this, like, blackened coal kind of, like, entity inside of it. And it's still... It's not like, ooh, this is a monster. Like,
she's still her mother.
It's her mother, and she's like hugging it. Yeah.
Slowly has the same rot.
Yeah, and it does the exact opposite of what, like, the standard horror movie does. You know, you're not recoiling in terror; you're embracing it, the terror, the horror. You know, because you realize that it's inside of you. there's no escape.
And that's what made it so effective. It was like so, yeah. It was real. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of. I mean, and it's this series that Final Destination series. It never quite works, but the idea of it is so good that it's just death coming for you. You know.
I only saw the first two, but yeah, those are fun.
It does, yeah. Final Destination 2 has that opening sequence is like one of the best shot sequences I've ever seen with the logs on the road.
I was gonna say I'm still terrified to drive behind those.
Yeah, it's one of the best sequences I think in movie history. But like the rest of the movie doesn't live up to it. But like but the concept of it and that scene is so fucking great.
And it was so much better than like in the first one with the airplane.
The first one there on the airplane, right? Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I can see this, but like then that like opening in Final Destination 2, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. 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 So yeah, but I'm definitely all for the reality based stuff in horror or not horror. So. You feel like we've done it more or less?
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have some weird reality-based horror movie next? Or
not kind of. I have two choices for you. If you want to do 70s or 80s. So from the 70s, I have God Told Me To.
What's that about?
Do you ever see God Told Me To?
No.
It's like it's these people, it's like a panic, like spree. People like... suddenly go on the killing sprees and they say that like God told me to do it. And this cop who's like, he's a Catholic and he's chasing them, like these seemingly random like crimes around the city.
It feels like something that would come out in the '70s. Yes.
Yeah. It's I think maybe 76, directed by Larry Cohen, who also did the like the Evil Baby movie, It's Alive. Do you ever see that?
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. So that's Larry Cohen. He's done a bunch of kind of fun 70s horror things. The other one I had was very, very different is The Vanishing from 1988. It's a Dutch movie.
There are so many movies called The Vanishing. Whoa.
Well, he also remade it with Jeff Bridges in the 90s, and that's not good. But like in 1980,
the 93 one.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the 1988 one. okay. called The Vanishing. It's a Dutch movie by George Sluizer or Suize. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but that was a movie that really creeped me out when it came out.
And what is this one about?
It's about a disappearance of a person and the investigation to find them. It's sort of more in the kind of like, well, not like this kind of like killer on the road kind of serial killer vibe, but it's more of a smaller story. Whereas like the God Told Me To is like, it's more of like panic, like society panic, you know, like.
I'm getting like half satanic panic, although that wasn't a thing yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm into that. I think I'm going to watch that one.
Religious. Well, oh, God Told Me To?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do God Told Me To. And we could, it's sort of, you know, it's a little bit in the ballpark of the Messiah of Evil. You know, there's like a cult undertones in there, you know.
I would say anything that like has God told me to do something. And it's,
yeah.
It feels culty. I'm in.
Yeah, it's definitely culty, and I know you like the cult stuff. So, yeah, let's try that one.